What in the world is going on in Lubbock, Texas? How is the Big 12 going to respond to this? And does Adam Rittenberg view this as another like speed bump in the road of college football, which we've certainly had a lot of, but we get over it and the ride continues? Or is this genuinely a, oh my God, that's a lightning rod, you know, curve in the road moment where the sport was one way and now it's another way?
Yeah, good to be with you guys. I do think it's a big moment, but in the same vein, it's one that we could be looking back at in a few months and saying, well, you know, nothing ended up happening. The Big 12 didn't sanction Texas Tech. The appeal of the NCAA to the injunction was denied. And let's start breaking down how Brennan Sursby is going to help Texas Tech repeat as Big 12 champion. I mean, that's a very real possibility, you know, given what happened earlier this week. I do think it's maybe most interesting to look at this on the parallel track of what's happening in Washington with the conversation about the bill that was introduced by the two senators, Cruz and Cantwell, which is, you know, that conversation is continuing. And, you know, it does help in some weird way to have an event like this to really get people's attention that maybe weren't as locked in on college football and all of its challenges like the three of us, and say, hey, we really need to get this moving to try to get to the finish line to allow the sport to govern itself better than it currently is. Where it ultimately goes with Sursby, you know, it's hard to forecast that. I did not think even in the state where you have friendly judges and certainly judges that are influenced by certain schools, that he would get this injunction, but he did. And now, you know, Texas Tech, which it made very clear last night on its extensive video that it put out, you know, they are fully supportive of Sursby, you know, dealing with what he's got to deal with, but also getting to the point where he can help this team in 2026.
Do you like the legislation they're proposing with Cantwell and Cruz? Do you like the Save, you know, Protect College Sports Act?
I like certain elements of it for sure. I mean, I really think the biggest thing is, you know, sort of this antitrust protection to avoid what we've, I mean, again, what's essentially happened here is that, you know, you went from a sport that was too controlled by the coaches and the schools to a sport that's now almost completely controlled by the players, their attorneys, and their agents. And that's not a sustainable model. You can't have a sport where you basically turned it over to those on the field and those that are representing them, because it's so individualized. There's no collective. There's no standards that we all abide by. Everybody kind of just does what they want, and it becomes an all politics is local situation where if you're unhappy, you just find a judge and then makes you happy. It's not a sustainable way to operate. And so I think that's an important element. I think having you know, some type of limitations around transferring can be beneficial. You know, some type of standardization with agents and certification. You know, ultimately, the sport needs collective bargaining. It's pretty clear at this point. Will those schools and the NCAA ultimately go forward with that, or will we have some type of separation where you know, the bigger conferences or whoever it is decide, you know, this is the only way we can go forward? Because again, if you have collective bargaining and you have the clear rules that the player side and the school side agrees on, then, you know, a rule is a rule. Right now, we don't have anything really that is enforceable, as was shown this week, and that's why there's such consternation and outcry about this injunction.
Yeah, we're talking with Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, senior college football writer for ESPN, at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter. It also just kind of sums up everything that sucks about it, because I think we're in tune for an awesome college football season. I'm going to get to your rankings about, you know, future programs and where everybody kind of stacks up and all of that. And what is the thing that is dominating the headlines in the offseason? The idea about, you know, antitrust and can this guy who gambled on his own team continue to play because a judge in Lubbock, Texas said that he could. So to that point, Adam, I'm going to ask you. You got your rankings out. ESPN.com, you tweeted them out as well. Future college football rankings over the next 2 years. You have a new number one. So for our audience who has, I'm just curious, what is the criteria that goes into kind of ranking this? And what was it about your new number one that made you put them number one?
Right. So yeah, this has been an interesting process. I did this. I've done this for more than 10 years. So I started doing this, and it was a three-year projection, you know, before the portal, before there was such widespread player movement. and you could really look at a team and say, okay, you know, they've got a quarterback in place for the next couple of years. They're really doing well at their high school recruiting. They're not losing a lot of coaches. And so now you really look at everything. You look at how they're doing from a portal perspective, high school recruiting. I really place an emphasis on offensive and defensive line outlook. Are you a team that has a number of underclassmen on your lines of scrimmage that are able to come back for multiple years, or do you just have a track record of being able to reload on the O-line and D-line? How are you with staff retention? Are you a team that loses your coaches year after year, or do you keep them together, much like Indiana has in each of the last 2 years? And it's really tricky, right? It's really hard to forecast, you know, beyond this season. But, you know, I think that, you know, again, if this was a one-year projection, you know, talking to you guys, Oregon would be higher than number four. But I think the reason I had Notre Dame up top is because their overall trajectory from high school recruiting, way better than under Marcus Freeman than it was under Brian Kelly. They finally developed their own quarterback instead of going to the portal every year in C.J. Carr, who may go on to the NFL next year, but may come back for another year at Notre Dame. Wouldn't shock me if he did. They're an elite offensive line and defensive line program. They only took 7 transfers this year in the portal, but 5 of them are considered blue chip transfers according to our research team. So that's by far the best percentage in college among the Power Four in college football. Hmm. You know, the wild card here is Marcus Freeman. If he goes to the NFL in a year, Notre Dame's outlook becomes very murky, and they're certainly not number one in next year's power rankings, but for now we're assuming he will be there multiple years, and that's why, again, Notre Dame gets the edge. It was really down to Notre Dame and Ohio State for me. Could certainly have gone with the Buckeyes, but actually the O-line and D-line play for me put Notre Dame over the top.
You know what's interesting is right now, Adam, there seems to be a wave of, not that coaches don't relocate, but like Dan Lanning's pretty loyal to Oregon. All these coaches say what they say publicly. We know they live in different worlds privately, but he's been pretty open about, like, I have the best gig. I don't need to go anywhere else. We can do it here. Freeman's got a great setup at Ohio State. Notre Dame, excuse me. I'm just curious of some of these young coaches. You mentioned Freeman in the NFL. What do you hear about some of these guys in terms of, you would pick one of them to say if they left college football, it would be for the NFL versus leaving for another program?
Right. I actually think those two are really good examples. I don't think Dan Lanning and Marcus Freeman are going to leave for other college jobs. I guess with Marcus, the unknown is Ohio State because he played there and he's from there, from the state of Ohio. But, you know, again, given where Notre Dame is and Ohio State is, I don't think it's a huge gap like there had been for years and years. And that's not a knock against Ohio State. It's really a credit to what Notre Dame has done and what Marcus has done. And so I do think Marcus Freeman will be an NFL head coach. He's young enough. He can go do it. He can succeed and stay, or he can fail. He can come back and pretty much take any college job he wants. And then with Dan, you know, I think he's been very clear that he's not looking to leave Oregon. You know, if the Kansas City Chiefs come open, that might be the one. But he's also very much in play. So it's why Oregon will not be slipping down these rankings, I don't think, anytime soon, and more than likely will be moving up rather than down in the future because of Dan and because of the type of program that he's established there. But, yeah, I think those are two really good examples of young, successful college coaches who I don't think are leaving for other college jobs, but you know, could end up going to the NFL at some point.
Yeah, we're talking with Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter, senior college football writer for ESPN, going over his future outlook rankings, future power rankings through 2027 in college football. You can find that at ESPN.com and also on his Twitter account. There is something that's one of the interesting teams that I find, and I was like, the first thing that I kind of looked at was one, like, where's Oregon going to be? I'm just curious. In lists like this, where people around the country have them ranked. The other one was Indiana, because you had Kurt Cignetti in year one turn Indiana into a respectable program, right, to win 10 games. Oh my God, that's incredible. They hadn't done that forever. And you had them ranked 20th last year. They then win the national championship. They go undefeated, the undisputed best team in the sport all season long. And you had them ranked number 7. And I was just curious of that, of like, because I'm also looking at this year and wondering, I know they're going to be good. Is it the Indiana of 2 years ago good? are they a national title? Like, are they at the Ohio State level of like that year in and year out? They're a championship contender, because I do think there's a gap there and a tier there where you could be good in a one-off where everything comes together, as opposed to the doing it year in and year out. You're one of the best teams in the sport. Why number 7 for Indiana, and what more evidence do you need in order to move them up higher on a list like this?
Right, yeah, they're a tricky team to rank, right? Because, again, they were the best team in the country last year. There was no doubt about it. Look at who they beat. Look at how they beat them. And they could certainly do it again. Now, they lost a lot of really good players to the NFL, and they lost a number of players who had been with Kurt Cignetti and that staff at multiple spots. But this team has done everything it can to sustain its place among programs that have for years recruited at a higher level, spent more money on their coaching staff, on their players. They did really well in the portal again. You know, able to get, you know, Josh Hoover as a successor to Fernando Mendoza, the Heisman Trophy winner. They're able to land a guy like Nick Marsh, who Notre Dame wanted, the wide receiver from Michigan State, able to help their defensive line, which lost some good players to the NFL. I really like their O-line and D-line outlook. And so, you know, why are they 7 and not 1? They're still not recruiting anywhere near where Oregon and Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Georgia's, again, probably the most dominant recruiting operation year in and year out in college football, high school recruiting. And so that's probably where it needs to still elevate. But, hey, if they can continue to fill holes in the portal and develop players, I mean, there's still a number of guys, if you look at their 2-deep, especially those that held over from the previous staff, that are really good players but were not high-level recruits. And so that's what still is the next step there. But Indiana, you give them credit. They have done everything they can to give Sig a chance to keep this rolling, even though they are not like the others. I mean, yes, last year they won a national championship, but if you were to compare the history, how the programs are constructed, where they recruit from, and so forth, they're still an outlier in this group of the other top 10 teams. Those other top 10 teams, for the most part, are always going to be hovering around the top 10. Indiana is the one that has burst in here. And shoot, if they can follow it up with another playoff appearance, they're likely going to rise even further in next year's FPR.
The one thing we've talked about, despite, you know, all the circus around the sport with Sorsby and whatnot, is the 4th in the conference. And what we mean by that is, when you look at the Big Ten, it is a team like you just mentioned and talked about, Indiana. It is Ohio State. Obviously, they're going nowhere. Oregon appears to not be moving. So we know, like, going into the season, our minds might be saying, there's 3. Who is the 4th in the Big Ten for you this season? We know USC has a quarterback coming back this year, and Lincoln Riley's talking about, now we have to be a playoff team. We know Michigan went the more kind of mature adult route of, like, let's get our culture and our program back. Let's go Whittingham. We know Penn State hired Matt Campbell. When you look at the Big Ten, who is the 4th team in the Big Ten, according to Adam Rittenberg?
Yeah, it's probably one of those 3, and I'm less bullish on Michigan just because I need to see it. I need to see how their passing game is. Their passing game has been really bad the last 2 years since they won the national championship back in 2023. Jason Beck is a really good offensive coordinator, but he's known more as a run-first guy. I mean, Utah had a top-5 offense last year running the ball. You know, Michigan's going to run the ball. It may not matter if they can't throw the ball at a much higher rate. Penn State to me is really interesting, guys, because, you know, it's essentially Iowa State's roster with a few of the Penn State guys mixed in. Matt Campbell's a heck of a coach. Their schedule is quite favorable for year one, but I just don't know if they're a playoff team. Like, at the end of the day, USC's the one I really want to like. And there's a lot of evidence that since they've been in the Big Ten, or since Lincoln has got there rather, to suggest, oh, don't buy into USC. You know, they're going to blow it. Their schedule's really tough. But you look at their quarterback, who's excellent. QBR leaders last year, and Jaden Maiava. You know, they'll find receivers. I'm not worried about that. 2 really good running backs coming back. And then again, I'm a big line of scrimmage guy. Look at their offensive line. Everybody's coming back. Look at their defensive line. They didn't have to go out and get a bunch of transfers. This feels like a team that at least was built the right way to then take the next step. Now they've actually got to do it, and they've got to defend their home turf, where they have, Oregon and Ohio State coming in. They've got to go to Penn State. It's a really challenging schedule, even without Notre Dame, and USC's got to deliver. So, you know, if it's not one of them, you can never write off Iowa. Iowa was really close to making the playoff last year. I know people don't want to hear that, but they really were. Oregon fans can attest, given how difficult that game was to win on the road. You know, maybe it's Iowa, maybe it's Washington rising up, maybe it's somebody that we're not really talking about. But USC, to me, is the most interesting fourth team in the Big Ten, because you can certainly make a case based on their roster and their quarterback and even their head coach. I mean, Lincoln Riley told me this recently. It's not like he's forgotten what a playoff team looks like. The guy had playoff teams every year at Oklahoma, pretty much. And even though it hasn't gone well at USC, he still understands the ingredients it takes to get to that level.
Well, don't you know, Adam, they also have an AI coach now, right? They got a new AI guy on their staff. That's all we need right now to help put us over the top. Let me ask you this, because I do think you're hinting at something that makes the Big Ten really interesting, and that is we know how top-heavy it is. There's been so many years where it's like, well, who's that next team from the middle of the pack? And really none of them have done it. I mean, Indiana, I should be fair. Indiana going from where they were to being at the top is obviously great. But then I feel like there's these same kind of Nebraska. Is this the year? 7-5. USC, here we go, 9-3. If I give you over or under 3.5 Big Ten teams in the playoff next year, would you take the over or the under?
I would probably take the over. I actually am pretty encouraged by the overall depth of the league, the fact that we're having these conversations. It'd be very surprising if, like, you know, Penn State's one of those teams, for example. Like, you can make a case for Penn State to make the playoff, even if they aren't that great of a team because of their schedule.
Yeah.
Like they can get to 10 wins. Like, and the 10 wins in the Big Ten is getting you in the playoff. And so whether it's that, whether it's USC, you know, winning some big games at home, I think Ohio State is going to be fascinating this year because of how difficult their schedule is. You know, they could be a team that we're looking at 9-3, and maybe the only Big Ten team that you could look at 9-3 and say, you know what, they still have to make the playoff somehow. So I think it'll be 4. But it could be 3. I'd be surprised if it's less than 3. I think it's probably 3 or 4. I don't think the Big Ten is necessarily getting 5 or 6 teams or something like that crazy into the playoff. But again, who knows at Michigan? Maybe Kyle gets it right in year one and gets the most out of Bryce Underwood, and they beat Oklahoma in week two, and then they're off to a special season because they certainly have the talent level and the coaching to get there. But I think it's going to be 4 with maybe Penn State as the 4th.
It felt great to talk actual football and not about can you gamble on your team. Should the Big 12 ban Texas Tech? It just we got a lot of issues in the sport right now. It feels good to talk about the actual sport. That's why the article was fun to read. Go check out his future power rankings, ESPN.com. He is senior college football writer for ESPN, Adam Rittenberg, at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter. We always appreciate the time. Hope the offseason is treating you well, and let's do it again soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.